Welcome to Reshaping Workflows with Dell Pro Precision and NVIDIA, where innovation meets real-world impact in high-performance computing.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of Reshaping Workflows with Dell Pro Precision and NVIDIA RTX Pro GPUs. I'm your host, Logan Lawler. Today, we're doing something a little bit different. You've heard, you know, from people across kind of the workstation industry, the industries we serve, you know, whether it's someone from BFSI or AI or media entertainment or engineering, etc. Today, we're talking to consultants. It's going to be very exciting because it's going to be very different, right? We're going to jump into some things with anthropology. We're going to talk about AI implementation, some roadblocks. So very, very excited with it. And I couldn't think of anyone better to have come on and talk with me with Tam from Red Associates. So Tam, take a second, introduce yourself, a little bit on your background, and then we'll jump right into it.
So I am Tam, Tamara Muhlenberg. I'm an associate partner at Red Associates. And again, we're a collection of social scientists, anthropologists. My own background is I have a PhD in African literature. And that's very typical because the lens that we bring in really our conviction of what we've seen is that pretty much all critical business decisions at their center are bets on people, bets on society, bets on culture. You have to understand what's happening in the world, what's happening in communities, in people, in order to design products, experiences, technologies that are in line with where culture is going, in line with what people need. So that's why I just had to laugh for a minute, because it really is, you know, we are, the lens that we bring is very much a human lens to business critical problems. And I think it's fun to talk about Gen AI, because for so many leaders today, there is basically no more critical problem than what are we going to do with Gen AI and how are we going to get the value out of it?
100% agree. So yeah, consultant, I mean, that's what's on the website, but
No, I just had to tease you, Logan. Yeah, I just had to tease you because it's, you know, it's true. And we do, you know, we have that grounding in classic as strategy consulting and management techniques, but we overlay it with that human anthropologist lens. So,
which I love. So, you know, 30 seconds, you're explaining what Red Associates does. Let's start there. 30 seconds, elevator pitch, regards to AI, what does Red Associates do?
Yes. So our fundamental perspective is that AI is not just a technical problem. And I think if you take a step back, a lot of the questions that leaders have been grappling with over the years is, oh my gosh, do we build, do we buy? How do I pull my data? How do I make sure I have the right data infrastructure? How am I protecting my IP? All of these are really, really critical questions. But now what? Now you have all the tech. What's, you know, why are you still not seeing the ROI? Why are you still not seeing the adoption? So what we've seen is that leaders are waking up now to this fact that AI adoption in the workplace is not only a technical problem, it's also a people problem, and it's a culture problem. So really what we do is understand what are the cultural, organizational cultural factors that are shaping how people are using the tools you've given them, why they're using them, why they're not using them. And that then starts to unearth levers, cultural levers, formal and informal factors that you can start to use and pull then to drive better adoption by tapping into those broader cultural trends within your organization, those collective dynamics.
Why I'm so excited, I think, to have this conversation is that from Dell, I mean, we're a technology company, right? At the end of the day. So very much speeds, feeds, how many GPUs, how many concurrent users, where's your data, like all this kind of stuff, right? And this is why I'm very interested in the other side of the coin. So many probably don't approach the problem this way. So let's say from, you know, you kind of said anthropological, like give me an example of that. Like let's say an AI implementation or maybe some strategy work that you've done outside of the speeds and feeds, like what is one of those questions or things that would fall into that bucket? And then we can kind of expand upon it.
Just to take a step back, you have your technical specs figured out. You have your tools built. The question is, what are people using them for? You know, we meet a lot of leaders who they can see, they're looking at the dashboards, how much are folks using them? You know, okay, so we have this many chat messages per week, but you've empowered them with all of these awesome agents. What are they doing? What are they using it for? So we're sitting down with them. We're going through their usage patterns. You know, we're walking the halls to understand, okay, how are they talking about AI? And what does that suggest about how they're thinking about it, what the relationship is to it? What are the narratives that are circulating in your organization? Is there's kind of, you know, hidden fears, for instance, about AI is coming for my job? These are emotional concerns that start to spread through an organization that can have really big impact on the people's relationship to tech and then therefore how they're using that tech and maybe also why they're not using that tech.
Okay, makes sense. So like what, how would you break down the pillars? Like, obviously I think you said like scared of the technology is one, but what are others? Like, is it, you know, training the tools not designed for the use case that I want? Like, what are some of those other things that would fall into that that you've seen from like research that you've done with clients?
Again, being anthropologists, we like to take a foundational view of the behaviors, norms, values, language, narratives that are circulating in a company around Gen AI. So metaphors, right? Metaphors are a good one. So one that I've heard often that just kind of drives me crazy, Gen AI is a GPS. GPS, okay, right? It's just, you know, it's an assistive tool. It kind of tells you where to go. That metaphor instantly, for many people, puts them in an outsourcing and de-skilling mindset of, oh my goodness, okay, so, you know, we can all remember the time when, I mean, or some of us, maybe Logan, you and I can remember where we used to be able to figure out how to get, you know, to the store on our own. And now we just rely on the GPS. We're being de-skilled. We're losing agency. If you talk about Gen AI in this way, it starts to shape a mindset of, oh, AI is kind of a competitor for my skills. It's going to de-skill me. Or it's this attitude of, oh, I just use it. It's like, you know, I'm kind of just blindly using it. That's a metaphor can then really shape how people are then very practically using it, why they're not using it, versus a metaphor that might be more empowering that helps them think about, okay, well, how does Gen AI actually enhance my work? I mean, I love kind of flipping from Gen AI as a GPS to Gen AI as like, if you think about like the density of a Google Maps view, I understand my neighborhood a lot better than I used to because of how often I use Google Maps. Now this is an enhancement and augmentation mindset. And I think about it, it's helping me skill and it's making me actually a richer understanding of what I'm doing. So these are kind of the fundamental dynamics you need to understand using the skill set of an anthropologist, walking the halls, paying attention to what are the metaphors that people are using. And that then starts to point to very concrete things you can do to change your messaging, change your language. You know, leadership behaviors are a big one. Again, how are you standing up in town halls? How are you using it yourself? Are you using it in ways that really enhance your own skills? Or are a lot of what you're doing is actually kind of just treating it as like sort of a basic outsourcing, like basic, you know, productivity tool. So that's when but again, coming back to the anthropologist, you really need this richer understanding of sort of the world around the technology within your organization. And from that, that then points to concrete initiatives that you can begin to enact when it comes to leadership behaviors, training, communication.
So I'm not an anthropologist by any stretch. Like I took this is not even anthropology. I took like sociology type class and I think I had a little anthropology
close,
in it. It was close, but yeah, I mean, I did okay in it, but it wasn't like my favorite class. I mean, there's not a reason why I don't have a PhD in it. So I love the kind of the de-skilling versus upskilling kind of mindset value. Like in it. And like, let's say there's a leader on the call who, you know, they've deployed, you know, whatever it is, Copilot, a RAG chatbot, any sort of AI application, doesn't really matter what it is. Where do you find in the organization, where do you find it most likely whenever they've deployed something? Is it what is kind of driving that de-skilling? Is it, or versus the upskilling? Is it how it's messaged? Is it like forced usage and compliance of usage, like saying you must use this 4 times a day or you're going to lose access? Is it like what drives, like for example, somebody that was watching this that was an IT leader and was like, hey, I want to make sure people are upskilling. What can they do or what are some of the practice they can do to make sure that people are being upskilled by the tools versus just de-skilling and outsourcing it like as, hey, I'm just going to use it to help proofread my emails?
Yes. And absolutely, and this, don't take this the wrong way, 100% Gen AI does not need to result in de-skilling. And I think just to, before I kind of get into that more direct answer there, Logan, just to reinforce what I was saying, it's more that also we need to understand, are people seeing it as a risk of de-skilling? And then is that de-skilling affecting their behavior? Or that risk of de-skilling affecting their behavior, and that actually I'm trying not to use this too much, or I don't really want to use it for something that I take a lot of craft or, you know, sense of pride or craft in, or I really feel these are fundamental skills. So it's also about understanding what is that narrative, and then how does that shape behavior in ways that are unhelpful. But just on that de-skilling point, absolutely, it does not need to. So I think one of the interesting things is there's so much dynamic right now about how AI introduces, you know, that again, you can. You start with the AI and then the human comes in. but how interesting to also think about sometimes the human can start and then the AI reviews. And the AI kind of provides a sense of suggestions on, okay, well, have you thought of this? Can you go that way? Now I'm using sort of the AI as a human co-pilot, not the human as a co-pilot to the AI, in a way that it's actually then enhancing my thinking. It's expanding how I'm thinking. Another interesting way that we've seen in terms of how Gen AI can upskill folks is, you know, when you ask it to do a task, then ask it to explain and defend how it did that task. Now it's sort of, it's giving you the reasoning for that. And we've had a lot of folks say, when I ask it to do that, actually it's sort of starting to teach me. And I'm learning why it did that. So those are just a couple examples of how, and there's many more. Actually, I think Anthropic actually just published a really interesting paper on this question of skilling. And they have very concrete examples of other techniques in terms of how you use Gen AI that can boost skills, not erode them.
It's an interesting approach, right? Like, I think people start with, you know, building kind of the tools before kind of figuring out, like, I don't know, bad example, we read at our house recently. You know, it's more of you think about like, hey, what's the floor going to look like before kind of the artwork, but then, or the rug. And then you're like, well, crap, our old rug doesn't fit with this. Do you know what I mean? And you end up causing yourself more work, right? So I guess from your perspective, you know, parting down kind of an AI journey, right? An implementation, regardless of what it is, obviously the tech is important, Yes. But where do you normally, I guess two part question. One, where should these anthropological, like this piece be looked at in the journey? And then where do you normally get pulled in is the question. Because I'm assuming you probably want to start up front, but I'm assuming you're probably getting pulled in probably more towards the end where it's like, oh my God, we spent all this money on this and no one's using it. We don't understand why. Please help. I'm guessing. I could be wrong.
That is currently 100. You put your finger on it, Logan. I mean, and we always, you know, we work also in our kind of, we have two sides of the house. I mean, the house, the piece of the practice that I'm talking about now is when we do work inside companies, applying anthropological methods inside companies. We also, of course, then work with, you know, big tech companies to help them design more human technologies. And, you know, even with those tech companies, we're often like, it's better to have an anthropologist in the room as you're developing the technology. It's going to be more human-centered. It's going to be user-friendly. That will help encourage adoption. Unfortunately, what has happened when we think about AI transformation inside workplaces is a lot of that tech has just been built and humans have been kind of consulted at different points along the way. So there is sometimes this problem of, okay, the tech isn't quite right. It's not user-friendly. We haven't designed the systems for the problems that people actually have. We've not built the tools in a way that they can integrate into their workflows because we haven't really understood what those workflows are. And again, that is not a problem that's specific to workforce adoption of Gen AI. That's, you know, everything from like, okay, so a medical records technology, you know, we need to understand how doctors in a clinic, what is their workflow if we want to give them a tool that's going to help them write their notes. Like that's any kind of technology adoption. But you're 100% right that a lot of times those tools have already been built. And actually, a lot of times, there's not really that much wrong with the tools. They're fine. The technologies are doing what they should. They're relatively user-friendly. I mean, the great thing about Gen AI is you don't actually, you know, the UI is very dynamic. And we also know that there's probably not, we have one of the signs that helps us realize there's probably not too much wrong with the tools is that some people are getting a lot of use out of them.
Right.
You know, if you sit and look at those dashboards, there's the folks out there that the kind of power users, the enthusiasts, they're just going to town. There's sort of middle of the road folks, and then there's the way behind. So that would suggest it's not just the tools, it's something else that is more about the culture, the attitudes, the mental models, the relationship, the setup of how people are organized, that's then informing their actual concrete behaviors and holding them back from getting as much value as they could.
So let's say you're pulled in. I'd love to hear your perspective on this. Is that I remember, I think it was my third grade, you know, teacher had wrapped around her chalkboard this like little saying. It's like it doesn't necessarily apply, but like kind of does here. It's like the right thing isn't always popular. The popular thing is not always right. Right. And then in this example, and why I say that is best case scenario is you are able to deliver an AI tool set that aligns to everyone perfectly. Kind of like at the end of the day, you have a manager who doesn't manage everyone on the team the same. They based on, you know, how are they introverted, extroverted? How do they like their feedback? Like you try to do your best to manage it, but that gets very exhausting. And it gets very exhausting on a tool standpoint because it might be one tool for someone else. So best case scenario, you customize it to everyone. That right now is not where we're at. So the question is, what is kind of more important? If you were pulled in up front and from your learnings and what you've done in like the consulting and the research, is you can't serve everyone, but is it better to attempt to serve everyone and as many people as you can with the tool that's going to fit them perfectly? Or is it better to say, hey, this is not the right tool for you. We'll get you something else. Do you know what I mean? Like, I give you, it's impossible to give everything someone exactly what they want. So how do you get around that, I guess, is the question.
Yes. I mean, and again, this is a technology problem that is beyond Gen AI. So I love that we're discussing this. I think there is this kind of either or zero sum. So there's something important where people are like, either one tool for everybody or everybody gets their own tool. It's like, you know, one size fits all or total customization. And really what actually is often the case is that, you know, you have segments, you have groups of people, you have subcultures, subworlds, where actually there's these folks kind of have similar needs and preferences and styles. And there's a technology that roughly meets, you know, 80% of their shared or common needs. So one technique is also just to understand where are, you know, what defines those key differences? Is it just work function? You know, are folks over in like the back office, you know, or in like legal and compliance, if you're in pharmaceutical, you know, they have really, really high risk needs. They have really, really high, they need a more more precision. They need more guardrails, they need more checks, whatever. Versus our folks over in commercial, they're happy. They're more like an 80-20 mindset. They need speed, you know, and then we can start to think about how do we design tools that fit those group needs as opposed to going all the way down to an individual.
Let me come at it kind of a different way. Maybe it'll help form it up here is like, and I'll use a relative example from Dell, right? Basically installed Copilot is kind of the record of the tool of choice. I think it's very common. We're a Microsoft shop, you know, pretty obvious. Yeah, anyways, so we use Microsoft Teams. It's great in certain use cases, right? But for example, folks in marketing, like we're like, hey, you know, let's be honest here. Like Copilot's okay, but like when we're trying to write like creative content and we're trying to write, you know, presentations for customers, like, we need something a little different than this. So they do have kind of, I can't remember what it's called. Like, I can't remember the tool, but it's something else outside of Copilot. And that was kind of a big deal because it was like kind of the first departure from that, right? So my question is that like, yeah, I mean, it's just not sustainable, right? Like, I mean, you want to give someone, everyone that they, a tool that will fit their exact needs. And is it, I guess the question is that, do you give them the tool that's going to work best for them? Or if there is not, if you want to apply, I guess here's a better question. Sorry, I'm all over the place because you've got me thinking. Like, is it better if you cannot give them exactly what they need? How do you get around that? How do you make sure that what you do give them, they still like, use, it's successful, they're happy with it, all of that? What can someone do? Because like at the end of the day, you can't give everyone what they want at all times. It's impossible.
I mean, that is what's exciting about so many of these Gen AI tools is that they can be customized for different purposes, or if they can't be fully customized, they can be trained. Or you can, you know, and that's where I think you start to then look at human adaptations around the technology. So I guess my first layer of question is, okay, what can we customize within what we have to meet your needs? But let's do that together. And then once we hit kind of a barrier there, then how do we train you up on practices, you know, making sure we have sort of a template library where we can use kind of, okay, so if, you know, maybe it doesn't originally understand the tone I'm taking, but we have a bunch of templates that I can drop in. It learns from that tone. It uses that tone. You're right, though, that obviously the best case scenario would be where you'd be able to find at least the right kind of tools, or also to be thinking about how do we do integrations where they're already doing their work. And obviously that's been a big explosion if we think about, okay, so, you know, a lot of designers are already doing their work in Figma. How do we have AI supports within that platform?
Okay. So, here's another great question because I run into this all the time. So, sure, a bit of a personal story is I think I'm pretty well spoken, but not so great with the written word. This is why I did not finish law school. I wanted to be in the courtroom. I wanted to be, you know, you can't handle the truth versus writing briefs. But that's what lawyers do at the end of the day. They just write a bunch of briefs. It's like, you know, you're a word jockey. I was using Copilot. I was doing some performance review end of year kind of like performance reviews for people. And I know the feedback I want to give, and I wanted it to be like really spotless, right? I want to be really spotless, make sure it was all spelled correctly, all these kind of things. So I use Copilot. There was one that I won't say was negative, but it was a little more on the direct side where there were some opportunities. I put that into Copilot, and it was like, hey, I am sorry. I am Copilot, and I will not write this or help you edit or help you write this. Even though I'd put in like this person needed this and this person needed this, like it still would not write it for me because it's like, we can't do that. You have to write it yourself. And it was just extremely frustrating because I was like, I'm not asking you to like make up feedback. And I get why you put the guardrail in place, because you don't want Gen AI to give like performance feedback from people that could affect, you know, their career, their pay, their livelihood. I get that. So how do you handle the negativity, or how do you when you come across that type of thing where it's like, this tool will not do what I want, or people are like the naysayers, like throw up their hands, be like, oh, this is not working. How do you get around that? How do you handle that? Or is there some people that just you're not going to enable on AI, I guess?
There's so many variables in that particular thing, of that particular use case and that particular tool. I mean, ideally, yeah, okay. No, it's like really good. I'm just sort of, okay, you're like sort of almost got my wheels turned. I think, I mean, obviously the ideal situation is that we would sort of, if this is, you're probably not the only person running into this problem. Is there a way? Well, who knows? My guess is, you know, if you're probably not. So how do we better understand, are there ways, if we better understand some of these limitations, these recurring frustrations, by exactly getting to that granular level of detail? And that is why our techniques, our methods are really about, okay, sitting down with folks, understanding, you know, what have been like the last five conversations you've had with the chatbot that you were just, and you're right, it does. It's like very emotional. It's not, people, it's funny about these tools, like it's not like, oh, whatever. It turns into disgust and frustration and patience really quickly. You know, so we go through those conversations with people, and then we go through, okay, so what are like the most helpful conversations you've had? And then you're starting to identify principles. In some cases, there might be one-to-one fixes of like, okay, maybe this particular thing is not working. If enough people encounter this, we should think about, is there a way to kind of either train our people to be asking for that kind of help differently, or is there a way to adjust the tool? But there's also something about starting to identify principles. You know, maybe there's a kind of interaction dynamic there that either we need to evolve the technology, or we need to sort of upskill our staff to be thinking about it differently. You know, I could think just off the top of my head, instead of sort of asking it to write it for you, taking a first pass, or writing it in one way. Okay, great. So that's also, okay, good. Okay, so this is where I was also like getting really into the details of what the specific example was.
No, I wrote like, hey, this person has an opportunity with this, this, and this. Here's an example of this. Like it was basically bullet points of feedback. And I was like, I think my prompt was, this is feedback on a coworker. Please write this in a professional, formal, with no, you know, no feeling type thing. Just to write it more fully, where it wasn't just like 17 bullet points, and it wouldn't do it.
Yes. Interesting. So this is what I think, you've actually hit on a really important thing, which is, I guess I want to call them sort of collective use cases. So much of what is happening right now, we've seen inside organizations, is we're just like, okay, giving everybody Copilot, and we all have to solve these problems on our own. We're all using it for EPRs. We're all using it to write reviews. And we're encountering these issues, we're encountering these problems. As opposed to somebody taking a step back, being like, okay, wait, if we're all using it for this purpose, couldn't we design a better way of doing that? Can we make an agent where we give that, you know, or customize, I mean, agent means so many different things, but could we customize a tool that is just for writing EPRs, where we give it a little bit more, or we train it where, okay, if it says it can't do that, then it gives you some support, it scaffolds you as the human to say, okay, well, I can't do that, but here's XYZ ways you could, or it starts to be more dynamic and dialogic and helpful in that way. But again, that requires that step of taking a step back and be like, okay, actually, where are there opportunities to unlock collective value from Gen AI?
I love that. It makes sense. Like, because I didn't like the shutdown. I didn't like the shutdown. It would have been better just to be like, hey, I can't, I don't know. It would have been better to have something, because then I was like, God, I got to like actually like type this thing out or whatever. But, and I think that's the other thing too, is that I would say I'm pretty AI savvy, and I did not do this, but I did, and I didn't do it. And this is on recorded, Riddell, so everyone will know I didn't do this. But what AI savvy people will do will be like, well, I'll just go to Copilot or not Copilot. I'll just go to OpenAI. I'll go to ChatGPT, or I'll just go to DeepSeek, and I'll just do it. And I did not do that. But like, I guess that is the question. Have you seen examples where, hey, AI is not working for whatever their use case is, and then that leaking to outside off-prem type sources?
I mean, that is the risk. If you don't surface those collective needs, those collective frustrations, if you don't think through how to design better tools for us, then you do kind of force people into those solutions. And there's been great, I mean, this is also, I think there's been a ton of writing and surveys that have done in the number of people who have shadow AI use, who either because the tools at work frustrate them, they go elsewhere, or they've just developed this very fond relationship with a Gen AI tool in their own life. Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, you know, I just love the way Claude writes. Claude knows me. Claude understands that. I'll just take this email, you know, and I'll just do it in Claude without quite thinking always about, okay, how sensitive is this? You know, what is that the right, is that the right LLM? So 100%, that is the risk, is you force people into kind of behaviors and you create IP risks that you wouldn't have otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Okay, so we're kind of getting towards the end of the episode. So what I want to do is give you some time. Don't name any clients. You don't have to name clients or like dollar figures or anything proprietary. But like, for example, you are out there and you've done work with a client. Let's say they involved you kind of upfront. Let's do it this way. They have not involved you upfront and they're coming to you. What are, say, three of the biggest problems that you're hearing in like that kind of initial kind of kickoff meeting? And then what are three things that they could do upfront and save themselves a bunch of time and effort that will make them be more successful on their AI journey?
I think the first reaction I'm going to say to this is it's not a simple problem. It's not a simple problem. And I, especially when you get into these dynamics of human behavior and culture and collective action, these are tricky, wicked problems. And you need to develop a sense of clarity to then understand what the problem is and how these dynamics are playing out in your org to then understand what do we go do. So let me just go back to the first part of your question there. What are they coming to us with? We've spent hundreds of millions on this amazing tech. We feel pretty confident this tech is pretty good. But people just aren't using it. They're not using it in the right ways. They're not getting the value out of it that we had hoped, and that could be self-perceived value, or more to the point of the business, we just aren't seeing the impact that we had hoped from an ROI, whether that's in time saved, cost saving, efficiency, or, you know, sort of revenue, better ideas, better quality. We just, you know, and it's also, there's a separate question of how do you measure that, which I think everyone is still trying to figure out. But those are the kind of the key questions that are kind of at the top of the mind. And again, a lot of them are sitting, so interesting. Some of them are sitting there looking at these dashboards. They're like, okay, this group, this person's using it more, this person's using it less. But there's no sense of understanding of why. Why has that, you know, why is this group over here seemingly, you know, they're using it a lot. They've integrated it in a lot of different ways. They talk about it. They're jazzed about it. They're excited about it. And this group over here is not. And that's where you need to think like an anthropologist and go and understand, okay, what are the cultural differences between those different groups? How are they talking about it differently? Who are the leadership voices in those different groups? And what are the messages, those leadership voices? You know, what are the value? How are they thinking about the value of Gen AI for their work? Is it efficiency or is it quality, actually? And those two things can be put you in opposite directions of how you use Gen AI. And those are the dynamics you need to understand before you can then create a very bespoke and custom initiative. And I think that's another important thing to say here, Logan. Everybody does work differently. Everybody's organizational culture is different. So that's why you can't, you know, one training initiative or one intervention that's going to work for this company over here, probably totally different for another company over here. And I think, you know, a very concrete example of that is coming back to these narratives, you know, AI's impact on society, ooh, its impact on water use, its job loss, its risk. There are some organizations where those narratives are really top of mind and they're inhibiting people from doing their work well. You know, you could imagine, you like kind of more, yeah, the public types of the world where, you know, politics, you bring your politics to work. That includes your kind of politics around Gen AI. But then there's other organizations where that's not a part of their culture at all. And you're dealing with very, you know, the folks are like, I don't bring politics to work. I don't bring that stuff to work. Like, I know I need to use it, like, whatever. And there's very different barriers and collective norms that are getting in the way of them getting value out of it. And that's why you really have to use these bespoke methods to understand what's actually going on, to then understand what to do about it.
Got it. I love that. So you spawned another question for me. It'll be kind of the last one that I have before I let you kind of, you know, wrap up with any kind of final thoughts. But when you say like different people, you know, have you seen like a generational difference from an adoption? Because I just think about myself as an elder millennial, right? Like, elder millennials are the best. Like, because we could do it all. We've been digital. We've been, you know, analog. Like, we could do it all. And then I think about, you know, some of the people that I used to work with before I moved into this role. And, you know, they're 25, 26, 27. Dude, I mean, they're just stuff that I just don't know. But then I think about my father, who's retired, and my mom, completely incapable. He sends emails in all caps to this day. Like, it's hilarious. It's hilarious. So how does that affect it? Like generational, like a demographic, a sociological, how does that affect kind of AI adoption? Do you see anything along those lines or is it just generally doesn't matter? I'm just curious.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it definitely does matter. And I think the question is how and why, on what particular dimensions? I mean, just to give an example, you talked about sort of the digital tech literacy, tech openness, but there's another key point about this, which is also how fixed are you in the way that you work? Do you have a way of working? You know, you've done your job for however many years as a senior person. I know I sit down on my computer, I do A, B, C, D, E, and this is always what I do. And that's going to slow you down in your Gen AI adoption, because a big part of it is learning new habits. Like, my first instinct is I go to Copilot. I don't start in, you know, the web browser, wherever I'm starting my task. And younger folks, when they're coming in, they're fresh, like, everything is new to them. They don't have those fixed behaviors. So that can be kind of an advantage for them. But they have other disadvantages, where a lot of them are really worried not about skill erosion, because they haven't really built those skills yet, but not building the skills. Like, they're like, yeah, this is giving me an edge. You know, I'm using this for research. But in doing that, am I actually learning less about these topics that later I'm going to need to be an expert on? So that they have separate concerns that could be inhibiting their use. And that's why it's really important to understand these different pockets and subcultures, because it could point, you know, it does point to different interventions that you'll need to make. But again, not at an individual level, but how you can start to identify different demographics and cultures where you can do something in a more efficient way.
Your final thoughts. Like, pretend someone just started listening to this point in the episode. What are kind of the key takeaways for you? Like, what do you want them to remember?
This big one, that Gen AI adoption is not just a technical problem. It is. Thank God we have folks like you working on it, Logan. You know, people need to be thinking about it. But you can have the best tech in the world, but if you have an organizational culture that is not supportive of, or is sending the wrong messages, or creating the wrong environment where it's creating a warped relationship with, you know, in people's relationship to that tech, you're not going to see the ROI. You're just not going to see that value. So again, it's not just a technical problem. It is a people and it is a cultural problem. So I think that's the kind of big first message. And then secondly, as a leader, start thinking about, well, to what extent, what is my role in that cultural problem? What kind of even tacit messages could I be sending by, for instance, what I'm talking about, how I'm measuring it? You know, a lot of organizations, they're looking at like, okay, individual use, like, you know, how many messages are you sending? Okay, is that actually, do you want people to send more? Like, is frequency your goal? Is individual use your goal? Or actually, should we be thinking about how are we using it? Is it workflow transformation the goal? And now we need to be having different metrics and having different goals as an organization. So I would just encourage you to take that, you know, have that moment of self-reflection about, okay, how am I might be sending the wrong message that is actually counterproductive to my aims here. And I guess the third, you asked for three, so I'm going to give you one more. I always have three. I am a consultant insofar as I always have three. And I guess the third one would be to get out there, you know, sit down to folks. You know, if you have that relationship with someone, what is the last 10 conversations they had with ChatGPT? When did they have a moment of disgust? When did they have a moment of delight? You know, open yourself up to getting in the nitty-gritties. And the fact that this stuff is emotional. It's not, you know, so many times at work, we're afraid of talking about emotions and feelings and values, and you have to in the Gen AI conversation, or you aren't going to see those. You aren't going to see those returns.
I love that. So where can someone listening? I mean, we'll put it all kind of down in the show notes at the bottom. But where can they connect with you, either on social media, email, anything you'd like to share?
Yes, absolutely. So we have a beautiful website, I will say. We have lovely designers. So redassociates.com. And we have offices in New York, Paris, and Copenhagen. I know, tough life, right? And then you can also, of course, find us on LinkedIn, find me on LinkedIn. And please, yes, please do reach out. We have a lot of events in all of our offices and a very active community, and we're always happy to have folks join.
I love that. Well, Tam, really appreciate the time. Probably, I don't say this lightly, probably one of the best episodes we had, because it was just so different. It was just so different and like had my wheels spinning, which I absolutely loved. So, you know, as we close out, Tam, thanks for the time. I think the big takeaway is that, yes, the technology is important, but it's not just the people. I mean, it's not just the technology, right? It's the people, the process, the culture. How are they using it? Asking why, right? You know, it's, you know, I like to use analogy. It's not if you build it, they will come. This is not Field of Dreams. This is not Field of Dreams. Like, it could be, but like, it's not like that. People aren't going to start showing up in droves. Like, you have to ask why you're building it, understand what you're doing, trying to tailor to them. So I love this episode. Please connect with Tam and Red Associates. All their information is below. And with that, signing off for Reshaping Workflows with Dell Pro Precision and RTX GPUs, and we'll see you on the next one.
This podcast was produced in partnership with Amaze Media Lab.